The Best of Times Radio Hour, live on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel, a show dedicated to seniors and boomers in Northwest Louisiana. Here's your host, Gary Kaligas.
Happy New Year, everyone, and good morning to my radio listeners out there. I'm Gary Kaligas, the publisher of The Best of Times, the only magazine and radio show for mature adults in Northwest Louisiana. I do thank you for tuning in to our show today, and also thanking those who might be listening via the internet at www.710keel.com. Also thanking those who might be listening via the Keel application on their Apple or Android devices. We also want to thank those who might be listening to this show and other previous shows on our podcast, on Apple Podcasts, as well as the bestoftimesnews.com website. Again, many, many thousands are listening to previously broadcast radio shows on these two media. We do thank AARP Louisiana Neighbors, and in country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer for being the exclusive sponsors of this radio show to provide you with beneficial information each and every Saturday morning. In just a few minutes, we're going to discuss the concept of winning ethically in your business as a current or future employee. So stay tuned to the show for some very interesting and beneficial information. It is Saturday, January the 18th, and we're broadcasting our show from the studios of News Radio 710 Kiel, a Town Square media station here in wonderful Shreveport, Louisiana. However, today's show has been pre-recorded, so we will be unable to accept call-in questions and comments from our loyal radio listeners. Coming up Monday, we're going to be having two important happenings throughout the United States. Of course, we're going to have the National Collegiate Football Championship game, and that will be taking place on Monday evening. But also Monday, January the 20th, is Inauguration Day. So we will be inaugurating our next president of the United States. I know that some people are elated and happy, others are not, but I do ask you to be respectful of our president, whoever he or she may be now or in the future, as we do need to respect the presidency. We wish all of our public officials and federal and state and local success in the coming year to hopefully solve all our problems and make us have a better life here in America. Be sure to pick up the January-February 2025 issue of The Best of Times at our 270 distribution locations. We do thank you for the many compliments about our magazine. We do appreciate hearing from you. If you are unable to find a printed copy of one of our 270 distribution locations, remember you can always visit our popular website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com to view both current and past issues of our magazine. We have over 10 years of past issues on our website for you to read and search and learn lots of great information. In addition, as I mentioned, you can listen to previously broadcast radio shows on the Best of Times Radio Hour. In addition, our current 2024 Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory is on our website for viewing and downloading. Of course, there's lots of interesting news that you can use for yourself as well as your loved ones. Speaking of Silver Pages, we are working on our 2025 edition of Silver Pages, the only senior resource directory in Northwest Louisiana. This will be our 23rd edition of our most popular publication with our readers both in print and online. We are updating and adding a lot of beneficial information that you will be able to be referenced for yourself, your loved ones, and many, many others. If your business is interested in being part of this 2025 Silver Pages, you need to hurry up because we're about to finalize it. Call us at 318-636-5510. Again, that's 318-636-5510. Our 2025 Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory will be released to the public on March the 1st of 2025. Each and every month, the Best of Times sends out a TBT newsletter via email blast to over 73,000 email addresses of seniors and boomers residing in Caddo and Bossier parishes of Louisiana. It provides them with links to read our current issue as well as to read our current Silver Pages. In addition, it gives lots of additional educational articles that are not found in our printed version of the Best of Times. It gives discount coupons It as well as includes a contest and includes much information about news and events about in the upcoming months. Join the many thousands and thousands who are receiving our free TBT newsletter via their email address. It's free of charge. You only just have to visit our website, thebestoftimesnews.com, and subscribe free to receive our TBT newsletter each and every month. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Hebert Standing Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Hebert Standing Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kalikas. I do thank you for taking time to listen to our show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Mr. Aaron Beam, who is an author and consultant, and I've asked him to come on my radio show today to present to you some recommendations found in his book entitled Ethics Playbook: Winning Ethically in Business. So he's written this book to help you win ethically in your current or future business. So thank you, Aaron, for taking time to be on our radio show today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to talking.
So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, and I want you to brag a little bit. You have roots in Bossier City, correct?
I do. I was actually born in Shreveport at Shumpert Hospital in 1943, and my father moved to Bossier City about 3 or 4 years later, and he was in the business of pinball machines and jukeboxes. He owned nightclubs, and I grew up in Bossier. It was very, very interesting business that my father had.
Well, back then, I recall I've had a lot of friends and relatives that were in that particular business in the entertainment in Bossier City on the Strip, and I can't remember all those places when I grew up. And I played the keyboard when I was very young at some of those clubs there. I could even drink, but they would slip me occasionally. But I went to the Town and Country Hotel and a few other places that I would go. But you know, when I got of age, I got to go to many of those places as well. So yes, those were the days of interesting happenings way before casinos. So again, you're right about that.
Exactly. It was in the day with my father of Hank Williams. Hank Williams almost walking distance to my father's restaurant and club, and interesting times.
Oh, yes. But didn't you tell me that you're also trying to gather information to write some memoirs about the past history?
I am, and I've put a lot together, and I'm kind of at a stopping point, and I'm going to send what I've done to the historical department at the Bossier Parish Library and kind of get some input from them. But I've been putting together documentation, not about the Strip, but about the other nightlife in Bossier City back in the 50s.
Oh, that'll be quite interesting. Again, I was born in 1950, but I remember in the 60s and 70s being part of that particular era. Well, I know that many listeners out there are probably quite interested in those happenings in the 50s. I know that for a fact. So let's talk a little bit about do you want to give a little background about yourself, or do you want to just devil into your book?
Well, I graduated from Bossier High in 1961, and I entered LSU that fall. And to a great extent, I never came back. I've been back a few times, but I moved to Baton Rouge, went to school there, and discovered a whole new world. my roommates were on each side of me were from New Orleans and New Iberia, and they made fun of how I talked. And I could barely understand what they were saying. I almost thought I'd moved to a foreign land, but I learned to really appreciate the culture of the South Louisiana. And
they taught you about real good gumbo and Mardi Gras and all the activities down there, and red beans and rice, which we didn't have up in North Louisiana.
I didn't have it at all.
Born and raised here, similar.
I never knew what a crawfish was until they put a plate of them in front of me down there.
And they would probably laugh at you like they laughed at me. I'm a slow peeler. they would make a big pile, and I would have like five or six. So they said, "Gary, you're too slow." I said, "Well, y'all are experienced with this. This is my first thing." And I didn't want to hurt him. He said, "Gary, they're already dead, cooked, and sauced. They got a lot of So again, I'm sure you also were shocked about some of the cayenne pepper and how much they used of that there, right?
Oh, yeah, my goodness. I wound up marrying a girl from New Orleans with her maiden name was Gautreau.
Oh,
Gautreaux.
Yes.
So I really bought into the whole program.
Yeah, that's a very good Cajun New Orleans name as well. So, so after that, you went into business. You were employed, right?
Well, it was during the Vietnam era, and Uncle Sam had other ideas for me.
So
I joined the U.S. Navy and went to boot camp as an enlisted man. And believe it or not, my first station duty was shore duty in Australia. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah. Now, that's the good news. The bad news, I was stationed at a naval communication station 850 miles from the nearest city.
Ooh.
I saw more kangaroos and emu birds while I was there than I did people.
a long way.
After that, they sent me to Vietnam, and I was stationed in a little base in Saigon, or outside of Saigon, in a city called Sa Dec. But luckily, I was in Vietnam when we were winding down the war. Even though I had an M16, I never had to fire it, never saw any combat, but I did spend a year in Vietnam.
Wow.
Now, once I got out of the Navy, I did move to Houston, Texas, and went to work for my uncle, who was starting up a new company. He was an engineer, and I worked for him as his office manager and what have you. I spent about 7 years in Houston, but my last job in Houston was at a hospital company. And when we got bought out, Richard Scrisci and I started a company called HealthSouth. We raised venture capital, took the can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. We raised venture capital, and within 2 years, we were a public company. We own surgery centers, outpatient rehab centers, and outpatient rehab hospitals. And we went public in 86, and by 1996, we owned more surgery centers, more rehab hospitals, and more outpatient centers than any other company, and we were 350th on the Fortune 500 list.
Wow.
And I was a millionaire many times over. But the bad news is I was involved in what's commonly referred to as cooking the books. And I wound up actually going to prison for doing that. But what I'd like to talk about today is how large corporate frauds like HealthSouth happened. The name of the company was HealthSouth.
I'm sure a lot of people in this neck of the woods knew about them. I knew about them back in my healthcare days. And I knew about the company and knew about a number, and you owned a number of facilities in the Shreveport and Bossier City area that I recall.
We did. In fact, we were operating in all 50 states, and we had a pretty good presence in Louisiana. But we were a very successful company. And the unique thing about our fraud, kind of different from others, is that we did not start doing inappropriate accounting because we weren't profitable or our business wasn't working. It was really totally driven by greed. My boss, Richard Scrisci, who was the other founder of the company, held a news conference in 1995 and said he wanted to be a billionaire. He said, "I want to be one of the richest men in the state of Alabama. We were headquartered in Birmingham, Alabama. And he would meet with stock analysts every year and ask those analysts, what do we need to earn next year for you to keep a strong buy on our stock? Because his board of directors had given him millions and millions of stock options. And they would tell him, and he would always say, we can do that, no problem. It didn't matter what our earnings projections really were. He simply promised Wall Street earnings that would cause the stock to keep rising up. And it was okay for a few years, but after a certain point of time, I started doing maybe not fraudulent accounting, but bad accounting, helping the numbers along whenever I could. But in the summer of 1996, we had missed our numbers very badly. And I just could not play any more accounting tricks. So my chief financial or chief accountant and I went into Richard Scrisci's office and said, we've got to report numbers below the street. This was the second quarter of 1996. And he said, no, we cannot report numbers below the street. If we do, the stock's going to crash. We'll all be sued. Your stock options will be worthless. You won't be the rock stars in Birmingham anymore. He said, get back into your office and get these numbers to where they need to be. And he literally wouldn't let us leave. He kept cursing at us and screaming at us, telling us to fix the numbers. Finally, my chief accountant, who had worked for our auditors, said, look, I can make entries small enough and make hundreds of them and spread them through all of our 1,500 general ledgers, and I will get the numbers to where they need to be. And then he said, now, Aaron, Richard, I'll be crediting revenue we never generated, and on the balance sheet, I'll be debiting assets we do not have. He literally would just be making the numbers up to street expectations. Richard thought about it for a while. He said, okay, guys, this is our best option. We'll do it this one time. We won't do it again. I'll start cutting costs, start selling off some of our airplanes. We'll get our costs down, and everything will be fine. So in the second quarter of 1996, we reported fraudulent earnings the first time. As I walked out of the room with him that day, I just said to myself, what have I done? What have I agreed to? You know, and I'll just be honest with you, I didn't have the courage to stand up to my boss and do the right thing. Put it simply, I was a coward. I was the chief financial officer. The numbers integrity depended on me, and I didn't have the courage to do my job. From that point forward, my life was terrible because every time an investor or something congratulated me on our earnings, I knew it was a lie, and it was just horrible. Within 9 months, I left the company. I just could not live with the thought of we kept cooking the books. The very next quarter, we did it. On into 1997, we did it. Wow. And when he said, we'll only do it one time, That was not true. So I left the company. That was 1997. In 2003, I was sitting in my home in Fairhope, Alabama, and I turned on the evening news, and the announcer said, we open tonight's news with a breaking story out of Birmingham, Alabama. Massive accounting fraud uncovered at HealthSouth. It's estimated that there's almost $3 billion worth of bogus numbers on their books. I could hardly believe it. Broken off all contact with the company, but 6-7 years had passed, and I had no idea that the fraud had gone on for that long or could go on for that long and grow to such an extent. But I knew right then that probably within a short period of time, I would be in prison because I knew I couldn't run away from it. So that's how it all got started. And today I'd like to talk about how these kinds of frauds can happen. Frauds like Enron, WorldCom, HealthSouth. I mean, these are large. Enron was, I think, the 11th largest company in the United States.
Right.
And they were, their numbers were just totally made up. Oh. So the public has to ask, how can this happen? Where are the auditors? Where
that's
are the board of directors?
That's what I was going to ask and follow up. But let's hold that thought. Let's continue this in our next segment. So we'll be right back with more information. But now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Hunting Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kaligas, and I do thank you for taking time to listen to our radio show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Mr. Aaron Beam, who is an author and consultant, and I've asked him to come on my show today to present to you some recommendations found in his recent book, Ethics Playbook, to help you win ethically in your current or future business. So, Aaron, thank you again for joining us today on the Best of Times Radio Hour. In addition, I want to mention to my listeners, he's born and raised in the Shreveport and Bossier City area. And so we're happy to have an individual like this. He was also quite well known throughout the United States as well, right, Aaron?
I was, as a chief financial officer of a Fortune 500 company. I was very Google-able.
You're very, very good. So you're telling us the story about HealthSouth. I mean, it's a sad story. I remember how I dealt with some of the individuals and professionals. Of course, I didn't dealt with corporate in Birmingham, but I was in the healthcare field then as well. And they were remarkable, quite professional, and you had a lot of great employees and a lot of great facilities throughout the United States. So it was, again, a positive thing. But again, you know, things happen way up high to make it look good. And as you said, one of the factors are greed. But I know my listeners were saying, aren't there independent auditors that audit corporations? Couldn't they find these things if they look hard enough?
You know, in a lot of ways, and I hope you're not disappointed, I don't talk a lot about that because when the fraud first started, and I left within 9 months, and it went on for all those years, I did not witness firsthand just what kind of auditing they did and how well they did it. And I've written a book about it, HealthSouth, The Wagon to Disaster, and I really don't want to talk a lot about it because I can't tell you exactly personally what they didn't do right. But the problem with auditors is that there's a built-in conflict of interest. And in ethics, that's one thing we talk about is conflicts of interest. They're supposed to be auditing the company, looking out not just for the company but for the general public. But who pays their fee? It's the company. So that's a built-in conflict of interest. I'm not saying all auditors don't do their job because they're being paid by the company. But when you have that phenomenon that you're being paid for by the people you're auditing, it's a problem. I like to use the analogy of a football referee. If LSU and Alabama are playing – and LSU hires their referees, and Alabama hires their referees, how do you think it's going to turn out?
Yeah, good point. Good point as well. So, very good analogy. But again, Aaron, I've got that same experience. I used to work for a Fortune 500 company, and back in the 70s, and I had the opportunity to visit with, I can't remember if it's Price Waterhouse or whatever they were, out of New York, flying into Shreveport, Louisiana to audit our department's books. And I was like young, how old was I, 23, 24, I think 24. And I asked the auditors lots of questions, and they said, that's generally not the case. We're supposed to be asking you the question. I said, well, I'm curious what you're doing. I'm not a CPA. I'm an engineer, and I'm part of this department, and my boss asked me to go around with you. And what I found was their sampling, I mean, our department was, you know, $500 million, something like that, but all the other departments were in the multi-billions. And they were just, you know, there are five of them supposed to be sampling some of our vendors and some of our pays. And, you know, and I said, you're only going to pick one bill from this vendor and determine that's appropriate payment and everything was provided? He said, well, that's a sampling. We're just going to take one random of the past year. I said, really? Okay. And so, of course, they picked it and they said, oh, we found no problem. I said, sir, you know how much we paid this particular company over the year? He says, how much? He said, I said, $67 million. And he said, you picked one claim of $1,000. That's really an interesting sampling. And he said, well, you know, we didn't find anything unusual about that particular claim that they submitted and you paid for. So the end short of it, everyone, is I kept saying, there's got to be something. It got to be more than this. So I got my bosses to approve me to let's investigate a few of these vendors because I was new to the block there. And sure enough, we found major significant billing issues with this particular company. The vendor hated me. My wife was worried I was going to be assassinated by them. But sure enough, we got them to reconcile millions of dollars back to the company. I mean, Did the company appreciate that? I don't know. I got acknowledged, but I don't know if it was a big deal. I do know that the auditing company got really upset that I got involved, and after they left, and so ethically, you're right. I found that the first time when I dealt with them, and every other year they would come and do audits as well, and we paid them. I don't know how many millions and millions of dollars to do that. There's got to be a conflict of interest here. And they spent more time during lunch and took us out and wined us and dined us. And I thought, well, this is interesting. Okay. But, you know, there's some conflict of interest there. I mean, I couldn't believe it. They weren't independent. I didn't think they were independent at all. So let's go back. So your book gives. So look, why did you write this book? You've written a previous book about the health house, and we won't go into that. But your ethics playbook is quite interesting. I think it will help readers who are involved in business. There may be seniors and boomers that are CEOs and CFOs and other executives. This book is pretty well written for those individuals at this point in time, but I also think it may be those new employees getting into the employment and a professional in a company that you may want to make sure that the company you're dealing with is ethical and is following along. And you know, an ethical company is going to be a more successful company than an unethical company, right?
Right. And the reason I wrote the book was I started after I got out of prison and had been mowing lawns for about 2 years because I lost all of my money. But I went back to LSU and told the Health South story. And a professor there said, you should do this at other universities. Young people majoring in accounting need to hear the Health South story. So I wrote the book about Health South. But I kept noticing as I was telling the story, people would ask me questions. Well, what can I do to prevent fraud in my company? How can I be sure everything is on the up and up in my company? So I decided to write a book explaining how these frauds really happen and kind of a playbook. If you read it and you understand it, it'll help you steer clear of frauds like Enron and HealthSouth. So that's the reason I wrote the book.
So, and So in your matter of opinion, is corporate FODs going on now in various companies, but Bobby, undetected or unknown?
Oh, I'm sure it is. Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? It's hard for me to say. I would like to think, because I've spoken to over 100 different universities about this and about my book, I would like to think I'm making a little impact and fraud is decreasing. But and it does seem like there was a rash of big frauds, Enron, HealthSouth, WorldCom, a few years ago, and there haven't been as many since then. So maybe it is getting better. But
Aaron, they're covering up better, and they're using more sophistications. You never know, right?
Well, it could be. And the computers are part of the problem. It's easier to hide things electronically than it is in some other ways. So I'm optimistic that we're getting better, but I don't know. You can just look at the news these days and feel like ethically we're not getting stronger. But I'm going to keep giving my speeches and do what I can.
So do most of this fraud is in privately owned businesses or publicly traded businesses, or it's equal?
I think it's across the board. It's even in churches and things.
Really?
Every so often I read in the paper that a little lady keeping the books at the church stole from the church. Charities are rife with fraud. So it's the human race, unfortunately.
And tell our listeners, one of the factors you mentioned before is greed, the greed of your, I can't remember his name from Alabama, that he was very greedy. He wanted to become a billionaire. He, whatever cost it was, he wanted to get more the stock analysis to be high up there so the stock would just skyrocket.
Exactly. Greed, in fact, there's a professor that wrote a book called The Seven Signs of Ethical Collapse. Seven things that companies that just morally melt down have in common. And the very first sign is if there's too much pressure on the employees and the company to make their numbers. So that's the first sign. When the culture in the company is all about making the numbers. And this professor said that when she walked into a company's lobby and everything on their wall were their financial results, that's a bad sign.
Wow.
But yeah.
Why would you want to put that in the lobby? Okay.
Yeah. So companies develop a culture, and the culture sometimes really breeds unethical behavior. HealthSouth had actually evolved into sort of a clan kind of thing. What's the word I'm looking for? Not clan, but my mind's slipping me now about when people just follow their leader no matter what, you know.
Yeah. So, follow the leader, and they don't want to deviate from that because they don't want to be alienated. So
right. The king has no clothes on. They just ignore it because the king is the king, you know. So,
well, the other thing is, you mentioned in the book somewhere about corporate insiders can cause fraudulent things to happen, right?
Oh, sure. Conflicts of interest, insiders cutting deals for themselves, all of those kinds of things. Real quick, I'll list the seven signs.
Okay, go ahead.
This professor. Second sign is there's a culture of fear and silence in the company. The company does not allow employees to openly contest their boss and that kind of thing. The third sign is that you have a bigger-than-life CEO who dominates the company, which we already talked about. The fourth sign is a weak board of directors. Oh. In theory, the board of directors is supposed to be the boss of the CEO.
Right.
And many times, boards of directors just do not do their job. And that certainly was a case of HealthSouth. The other thing I mentioned briefly, conflicts of interest. Another thing is the company seems to have innovation like no other company. One of the things about HealthSouth was for 10 years, they never missed their earnings. That just didn't happen. So when you see a company and their product and everything seems to be too good, it could be a problem. And the last sign is kind of an interesting one. Goodness in some areas atones for evil in others. These types of companies seem to be very charitable. They give money to charities, and they're always tooting their horn about what good corporate citizens they are, while behind the doors they're cheating. So that was the case at HealthSouth. I remember when I wrote my book and I was doing a book signing, and young lady said, you should be ashamed of yourself. Richard Scrushy was so benevolent. He did so much for the community. You're wrong, you know. Of course, he was giving away HealthSouth's money, not his money, to make himself look good.
He was sponsoring different activities, children like football leagues, basketball leagues, you name it.
Exactly, yeah. So those are the seven signs real quickly that – large corporate frauds, they won't have them all, but the more of those signs they have, weak boards of directors, over-the-top leader, conflicts of interest, if you have enough of them, you better not invest in that company.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information. Uh-huh. But now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. Thank you for listening to our show today. And joining me on my show as a special guest is Mr. Aaron Beam, who is an author and consultant. And I've asked him to come on my show to present some of his recommendations found in his book, Ethics Playbook. Thank you again, Aaron, for taking time to be a part of our radio show. It's been quite interesting.
Well, thank you.
So the one thing I wanted to mention about his book, why he calls it an ethics playbook is because he loves football. And he has lots, and all of his different suggestions at ethics are like plays, ethical play number two. And he has the X's and O's and the pass of what the quarterback, et cetera, do. I thought that was very good. But he's got many, many of these. I mean, up to, I don't know current number. I think it's 25 ethical plays. And I think some of them, you know, if we should also be talk about. One of them, you said, be skeptical about philanthropic, right? And you talked about that.
Right. Exactly.
Sometimes they buy goodwill, but maybe doing good, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're a good company. I mean, some of your deal is really interesting. I was reading some of these. So what I want to tell my listeners out there is the book is good for someone in business now, also if evaluating companies that you might want to invest in, but also for your kids and grandkids who might be getting into business, they might want to read that to make sure when they join an organization, when they join a company, that is as an ethical as possible company. If some of these traits are not found or found, they need to concern themselves. Is that right, Aaron?
Exactly. And I do in the book talk a lot about what can you personally do to build ethical strength.
Good.
And surprisingly, the best way to do it is to just practice ethics every day. The more you do it, the better you're going to be at it. It's like an athlete hitting a tennis ball hundreds of thousands of times so he can do it almost unconsciously.
So give me an example. Give me an example of that.
just little things. One of the professors I've learned a lot from, he said that all humans lie a little. All
the white lies.
A little.
Right?
White lies. If your wife asked you, does this dress make me look fat?
Oh.
What are you going to say? So you're conditioned as a human to lie sometimes to protect yourself or whatever. But he says the key is he calls it your fudge factor. He says, don't let your fudge factor grow. If you start making it a habit of solving all your problems by lying, you're going down a very bad path. So accept the fact that you're tempted to lie all the time, tempted to cheat, but practice ethics all the time. And I'm a changed person since I've gone through all of this. I'll give you an example. I do public speaking. Sometimes I'll book two speeches in the same city, and of course I bill for my travel. The old Aaron Beam would be tempted and probably would charge both people for the travel, sort of double dip. The new Aaron Beam won't do that. That's wrong.
I'm going to be there two different sessions. Okay.
Yeah. So I divulge and I let them know. And they appreciate it when I tell them, look, I'm going to be in town to give another speech. Half of your airline ticket is going to be paid by the other company. And they appreciate that. So that's a little thing. You do those kinds of things repeatedly. You know, if somebody gives you too much change back in a store, don't walk out with a smirk on your face that you beat Walmart out of 50 cents. Go back and give the 50 cents back to the big Walmart store. Practice ethical behavior every day.
That's a good point.
And that's the way you build ethical strength.
And you're right. And once you start being unethical, it gets snowballs, right? It gets worse and worse. As you tell that little white lie, gets worse and worse and worse. But, you know, that is important. And show some goodness and show some understanding. I mean, I hate to say this, I'm up really upset when I get invoices and I never receive this or I never. And so I sometimes question. And they always tell me it's an accident, you know, that kind of deal. And in my in my consulting days, I really itemized everything, and I would have sometimes some of my clients come back and says, Gary, you didn't bill us for that second day that you were here. I said, well, I didn't do that much. I only spent like an hour with you, but you know, he said, but you were here with us the whole day. I said, well, I just enjoyed your camaraderie for lunch, and we went and did some other tours around the area. I didn't think I should bill you for that type of services. And they said, well, you're very ethical. I remember them telling me that. This was up in Duluth, Minnesota, and they were like, couldn't believe it that I didn't bill them. Other consultants would bill us, you know, the whole thing, even while they were in the airplane going back home. I never did that. I never did. Probably could have, should have, but yep. I never did that as well.
Exactly.
So what other plays can you give to our listeners while we have a little bit more time left here?
Frequent reminders. You have something in your life, and I have something called Ethel. And it's on my business card. It's in my slide presentations. And it's a big painting that I own of this young girl blowing bubbles. And she's very innocent looking. And I named her Ethel, kind of a play on ethics.
Oh.
And every day when I'm home, I see Ethel.
Oh.
And she's my reminder of how important ethics is. And I tell people when I do my presentations that everybody needs to have an ethel in their lives, something that reminds them every day of how important ethics is. And it's important because when you're unethical, people lose trust. When you lose trust in your company, in your boss, in anything, when you destroy trust, you've destroyed everything. And being unethical, the worst part about it is that people no longer trust you. When Enron happened, and Enron was voted is the best, by Fortune magazine, is the best company in the United States 2 years in a row. The best company in the United States, Enron.
Wow.
And when their fraud broke, people were like, who am I to trust? Where were the auditors? Well, how did this happen? You know? So the reason for being ethical more than anything else is to build trust. And without trust, you've got a people who are just constantly afraid of each other.
Well, and that's the end result. Want them to be trustworthy. But in this day and age, there's a lot of greed going out there. I mean, I've dealt with individuals and I've dealt with various people involved in various companies, and they're so competitive that they want to do things that, you know, may be unethical to outbeat their major competitor over there. I mean, when I was in the healthcare field, I remember some of those other agencies that would do very unethical things. And I said, I told my staff and told my higher-ups, I'm not doing that. And I was a home health care administrator for 12 years, and I said, I would not do that. It's very unethical.
Yeah.
I said, well, everybody's asking for it. I said, well, they can ask for it. Well, we're not going to do that. We're not going to go down that path. And maybe they were. But so it takes some guts sometimes, you know. You're going to be outbeat by it. But, again, those agencies ended up, you know, just like you said, being the top and highly profitable, and all of a sudden they faded out to nothing, and several of them got federally investigated, and they were definitely charged with lots of things that they shouldn't have been charged. I mean, couldn't have been charged if they didn't do these unethical practices. So, you know, it comes around. Right. They might have been very successful, and I hate to say this, generally those people that are unethical brag a lot. You're right. You mentioned that. They brag. I would go to various meetings and they would brag about it. And I said, hey, that's your decision, not mine as well.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us today. Best luck to you. Hope you get all your information about your family history in the Bossier Shreveport and Bossier City area. That's going to be a fantastic, interesting book. I know that you enjoy writing, and looking forward to having you on a future show to talk about that scenario. I love those type of historical aspects of our Shreveport and Bossier and surrounding areas. So best of luck to you. And again, thank you for joining us today on the Best of Times Radio Hour.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great day, and looking forward to talking to you in the near future. Please join us, everyone, next Saturday for another show that could benefit you or your loved ones. Don't forget to pick up your personal copy of The Best of Times in one of our 270 distribution locations. May God bless you and your family. God bless America. Have a great day and a great weekend. Thank you again for listening to our radio show. I'm Gary Kaligas, wishing you and yours the best of times both today and every day. Have a great day.